Good morning. I'm Muriel Bowser. I'm calling to order the regularly scheduled meeting of the Planning Program Development and Real Estate Committee. Today is October 10th, 2013, and it is 9:50. We're located at the WMATA headquarters, and I want to recognize presence of a quorum with Mary Hines representing the Commonwealth of Virginia, Kathy Porter, state of Maryland, and Tony Giancola, the federal government. Let me first move to certify that in the Planning Program Development and Real Estate Committee, to the best of each member's knowledge and with no member dissenting, that at the just concluded executive session of the committee, only such matters as are authorized for discussion in executive session under our bylaws, and only those matters identified in the notice by which the executive session was convened were heard, discussed, or considered by the committee. All those in any discussion or dissent, all those in favor say aye. Aye. I would just like to note that all the members present voted in the affirmative, and the executive session's content has been certified. We have an agenda before us that includes one action item. Let's approve the agenda first. One action item that's related to the Tacoma Amended Joint Development Agreement, and one information item related to the Regional Transit System Plan. I move the approval of the agenda.
Second.
All those in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? The ayes have it. So we have the agenda before us. The members were provided the minutes from the last meeting, and I will entertain a motion to approve those minutes.
Second.
The motion has been moved and seconded. Any discussion, corrections, changes to the minutes? All those in favor say aye. Aye. And let the record show that all the members present approve the minutes of the September 12, 2013 meeting. I'd like to now move to the first action item on the agenda, which is the Tacoma Amended Joint Development Agreement. And I will call on Mr. Wall to make the committee, the staff presentation.
Good morning, and thank you, Chair Bowser and members of the committee. Staff has one real estate action item today for the Board Planning Program Development and Real Estate Committee. We are requesting board approval to negotiate and execute an amended and restated joint development agreement for the Tacoma Joint Development. We're also requesting board approval to conduct a compact public hearing to provide an opportunity for the public to comment on the proposed station area changes. As background to the project, the currently proposed development is a result of a nine-month effort to revise a previously approved Tacoma Joint Development project. Since January 2013, WMATA staff have proceeded through a very deliberative process in which we've researched and reviewed historic community concerns, conducted outreach with community leaders from both Maryland and the district, conducted a station access transit planning analysis, and from that analysis, we have then created a plan that accommodates transit first. And finally, we've retooled the development program to fit around that transit program. In July, we presented to the board committee an update of the Tacoma project with the community's feedback and the committee's feedback. As a result of that presentation, we have made further changes to address the community concerns that were raised, including negotiating an approach to preserve the open space as part of the project and have that space be maintained by the developer. We've initiated a traffic study to assess the potential impact of the project to the surrounding road network, and we've adjusted the development program density, massing, setbacks, and buffers to respond to community concerns. As previously stated, the revised Tacoma plan is one that focuses on transit first and is a result of a station access analysis that is shown in the site plan here that shows how the proposed project will support access to the station by all modes, pedestrian, bicycle, bus, and private vehicles. From this transit-focused site plan, we then work with the developer to create a development program to fit around and above those transit requirements. The resulting plan, which is shown here in an older rendering, is a low-to-written mid-rise multifamily development. Since this rendering was originally produced, the developer has agreed to reduce the height on Eastern Avenue to better integrate with the lower-density uses on the opposite side of Eastern Avenue. As part of our outreach to the community, When we presented the concept version of this plan earlier this spring, we were at 266 units. Based on the reaction to the jump in density, the program as presented in July was reduced to 221 units. And since July, we've now reduced the program to 212 units to accommodate that reduced height on Eastern Avenue. In accordance with WMATA joint development policies and guidelines, we seek to achieve the following objectives in each project: integration of WMATA's transit facilities, reduction of automobile dependency, increased pedestrian bicycle originated transit trips, fostering safe station areas, enhancing surrounding area connections to transit stations, providing mixed use development, including housing and the opportunity to obtain goods and services near transit, offering active public spaces, promoting and enhancing ridership, generating long-term revenues for WMATA, and finally encouraging revitalization and sound growth in the communities that WMATA serves. This current plan meets all of those objectives. The benefits for the community are as follows. Multifamily housing has less parking per unit than the prior townhouse plan, a close representation of TOD. We'll provide more residents who will walk to and support the local businesses and services, less disruption to the existing bus loop transit facility on the site. We've improved pedestrian access to the station entrance. We've preserved and enhanced the open space that currently exists at the site. We've accommodated space for a new bike station as well as a new Capital Bike Share station as part of the project. We've provided space for shuttles from nearby development, including the proposed Walter Reed project. All of these things have been encompassed into the new development program for Tacoma. And looking at benefits for Metro, we have provided space for future transit needs as the area grows and demands on our station increases. We've provided more riders and associated ridership revenue. We've increased the project revenue from this new development program, resulting from the reduced cost of Metro facilities. And very importantly, we support our momentum goals of improving regional mobility and connected communities and ensuring financial stability and investing in our people and assets. Very critical to this discussion is the fact that the approval that we're seeking from the board today for this amended joint development agreement and the compact public hearing is the very beginning of what will be an extensive, long process of ongoing community engagement. On this slide here lists the various steps of this process of going from today to an approved project. Highlighted in yellow are those areas where there will be particular intensive involvement from the community, including a WMATA compact public hearing that will address the traffic study results, the plan unit development process, which will be done in a very, very intensive manner with the surrounding neighborhood, historic preservation review board submissions about how this project fits into the historic district around Tacoma, and a series of zoning commission hearings that will be part of this process. In addition to these formal steps, there will be informal engagement with the community and the surrounding community leaders. That has already started. We have been engaging the community since January. The developer has initiated working groups with the local community, and those will continue throughout this process until the development plan is complete. So in order to move this process forward and allow for that level of intense ongoing negotiation and engagement with the community, we are seeking board approval to negotiate and execute an amended and restated joint sales agreement for the Tacoma Joint Development and board approval to conduct the compact public hearing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wall, for your presentation. And I want to also thank you and the entire staff for the level of work that has gone into the proposal before us. And I appreciate the comparison that you made to where these discussions started in January, I think you said,
right,
to now. And certainly I know myself and others have participated in meetings in the community where this project has been discussed, some formal, as you note, and others less formal. So we appreciate the work that has gone into this. And let's also say, I think generally speaking, that a number of residents have indicated that they favor this plan to the old plan. You'll find others who favor the townhouse plan to this one. But I think generally speaking that the discussion has moved a long way from some years ago when the question was to develop or not to develop Now I think that the consensus is that we should develop this parcel, and we should do so in a way that enhances our neighborhoods and certainly not only enhances the value to Metro, but to each of the communities that surrounds this transit station. Having said that, we've been through this before with this particular parcel, so we should learn from experience all the pitfalls that relate to it. And I expect to be able to fully support a development of the Tacoma Metro station that keeps the principles that Metro has laid out in your presentation today, but also recognizes a number of the principles and concerns of the surrounding neighborhood. I am concerned that when this committee advances this discussion, that we do so with a complete package. And one, I think, notable item that you note in your presentation that is ongoing is the traffic study. And you might say, you know, it seems like kind of a thing that doesn't matter that much, or that it's not going to change the results, or people know when you build 200 units, there's going to be more traffic. And all that is true. But when we present these ideas to the community, we better be doggone sure that we have our ducks in a row and that we have a complete package. So for that reason, I'm not going to move today an approval resolution, but I am going to put on the table for consideration by the members a motion to postpone an approval, any action on this development agreement today, keeping in mind that you have explained to us that we will have a complete traffic analysis until we get to the compact hearing, where there will be a requirement for an even more in-depth traffic analysis. It's my your expectation that could happen as soon as a couple of weeks. So with that, I'm going to put on the table a motion to postpone.
Second.
It's been seconded by Ms. Porter, and I'll open up the floor for any discussion. Ms. Porter?
I was just going to, for clarification, ask Madam Chair whether you would entertain discussion of the concept or the content of the resolution at this point, or whether you want to postpone that discussion also.
I think that it would be perfectly appropriate to talk about anything that's been presented by the staff. Mr. Giancola?
Thank you, Mr. Wall and staff, for the report, and certainly I know all the work you've been doing on this particular important project. Obviously, for me, it's even more important because I live in the Tacoma community, so it's a important project that we've wanted for a long time. I would like to get a little more detail on the status of the traffic study and the scope and what kind of deliverables you were expecting from that study?
Sure. The traffic study was commenced at the beginning of September. We have an outside consultant that is conducting that study for us. We have documented the existing conditions in the area. The consultant has conducted traffic counts for all of the key intersections surrounding the Tacoma Station. They have built a model that simulates the existing conditions. And they're starting their no-build model runs, essentially analyzing the impact and the current performance of the intersections to date. Going forward, the consultant will analyze a build model that looks at how does this project impact the simulated traffic conditions, and they'll be creating a technical memo that highlights all of this information they've collected and the resulting analysis of the impacts of the road network. That technical memo is scheduled to be complete by the end of October.
Yeah, thank you. I want to ensure that certainly all the intersections in the area are included. As you may be aware, there are several developments in the planning stages, not yet under construction. Obviously, there's one major project under construction, two projects that I know are anticipated to occur in that area. Also, as a deliverable, I would hope that there would be some distinction in the traffic analysis and study of through traffic versus traffic that actually is going to and from the Metro station, as well as traffic generated from the units that currently exist in the surrounding area. I know the Gables is one, the condo unit, the apartment unit on Carroll Street. So certainly I would hope that those are included in this final report.
Ms. Porter?
I very much appreciate, Mr. Wall, the work that you've done working with the community and trying to make sure that the concerns the community has are incorporated into the development. That work that you have done has been noticed and appreciated, and I just wanted to convey that. I think it would be very helpful if some of the agreements that have been worked out with the developer in terms of things like height and setback on Eastern Avenue could also be incorporated into the resolution, not necessarily, you know, specific numbers of feet, which, you know, we certainly don't want to preclude the PUD process and whatever specifics they may put in there. But the issue of how the building presents itself to its neighbors on Eastern is an issue that I know people are concerned about, both on the Tacoma Park and the Tacoma DC side. And so putting language into the resolution that incorporates an assumption of appropriate of setbacks and height consistent with the other buildings on Eastern Avenue, I think would be a good response to some of the community's concerns. And it doesn't sound like, from what I've heard, that it would be inconsistent with the developer's current plans.
To recognize that we've been joined by Mayor Yule, who it will cast any votes for the Commonwealth of Virginia. Let me, I have a couple of questions, Mr. Wall, and I just want to understand the staff's reasoning behind recommendations for the green space that's currently at the Metro facility and how your current proposal recognizes that.
Sure. The current green space on the Tacoma Park Station is a little bit over 2 acres in size. As currently negotiated in the current agreement, we are requiring the developer maintain a minimum of 1 acre in public open space in perpetuity. We're also requiring that the developer maintain the entire open space to exceed that 1 acre. The entire open space will be maintained by the developer in perpetuity. We have agreed to that acreage based on the fact that it's consistent with the D.C. government small area plan for the Tacoma Station area, and it's also consistent with the previous public space that was part of the previously approved development program. So by doing so and by requiring that there be a minimum of at least 1 acre in space, that ensures that there will be this public space in perpetuity for the Tacoma and Tacoma Park communities.
So is it your, do you anticipate then that there would be no substantial change to the way the green space looks now unless there was a need for a transit facility to be located on 1 acre of it?
Correct. Actually, the opposite in terms of no matter what, there'll be 1 acre of public space, but if there should be a need for increased bus capacity from either Metro bus or ride-on buses or other shuttle buses that might ultimately serve this site, or if there should be the need to locate a streetcar terminus on this property. In any of those scenarios, there will be a minimum of 1 acre park space that persists throughout any of those changes to the station.
Okay,
and we're accommodating those future changes.
The agreement doesn't say that the developer will maintain just 1 acre.
Correct. The developer is responsible for maintaining the entire park space, including the 1 acre that will always be parked, plus the additional public space that will remain.
How does the agreement deal with parking requirements?
Currently, we are silent with regard to parking requirements for the development program. We address the requirements for Metro short-term parking and kiss-and-ride parking, but for the development program, the parking requirements are dictated by the D.C. Zoning Code.
What is the what are the time frames at play here for advancing this project? Are there certain deadlines that Metro has to meet? Are there certain deadlines that the developer has to meet? What type of time frames are we dealing with?
There are no current deadlines from either the Metro perspective or a developer perspective. Our goal in seeking to advance this process today was to essentially allow those very detailed, intensive discussions, presentations, community engagement processes that are outlined on this next step slide to occur. In terms of to date, there's been a small number of community participants. There's been a handful of community presentations to Tacoma and Tacoma Park communities, but there has not been the exhaustive structured community engagement process that will happen going forward through the compact public hearing process and the PUD process to follow. Our goal is to allow those processes to start and actually allow that engaged discussion with the other elements of the project.
Okay. Are there any other questions from members of the committee?
Can I just make a note? The City of Tacoma Park has been going through a process to take public comment and develop a resolution that they would forward to the chair and to the board. And I'm just noting that for the record, and I'm sure the members of the board will take into consideration whatever concerns the City of Tacoma Park has. I very much appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. And likewise, we will make sure that the District of Columbia has some official note on the record and a more formal input process, and we will keep the members of the committee apprised of any results or any actions that result from those meetings. Is there anything else you'd like to put on the record, Mr. Wall?
That's it.
Okay. There's a motion on the table to postpone an approval of this joint development agreement. Don't have a date certain, but we will come back to the committee when we have a completed traffic study, which we expect to be at the end of October. Is there further discussion on the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Let the record show that all the members present voted the motion, and it carries. The next item on the agenda is an information item, is the Regional Transit System Plan, a progress report. And Mr. Kanon is going to deliver the staff report. And how much time will you need? Okay. I will just note that a number of the members present are not at the safety and security meeting because it finished. Okay. Finance has started. And so I'll just also put on the record, and I've asked the staff to do this, and so maybe we can get it done for the next meeting because some people at the other meeting note our absence. But we're not actually absent from doing the authority's business, so there might be something posted that there are concurrent meetings happening and that our representatives are attending to that meeting, and will, of course, be fully briefed, and we've shared our thoughts with them so they can bring our thoughts to that discussion as well. So having said that, I'd like to recognize you for 15 minutes if you need it.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. We bring to you an information item today. It's an update to the Regional Transit System Plan, which was last brought to this committee in April of 2012. What we'd like to do today is to give you a reprise of the purpose of the plan, why we're doing this, and the board's specific role as per the compact in doing this work, to update you on the analyses completed to date, and then to also outline the next steps of this project, which we anticipate will take the remainder of the next calendar year, if you will, before we bring back the recommended plan to the board for adoption. So to remind us on why we're doing this, remember that the adopted regional system plan dates back to 1968. Originally it was a 97.2-mile system. Later it was expanded to now include the 106-mile rail network. And that was actually a result of some revision. In the 90s, the board actually recognized that the region was growing and had transit demand needs that were beyond that which could be satisfied with the original 1968 ARS, or Adopted Regional System Plan. And so they set forth goals for service expansion of metro and non-metro transit services. That's contained in this document, the 1999 Transit System Expansion Plan. And that set some interesting goals to increase the amount of fixed skyway transit we had, to go from 103 miles to 150 miles on a variety of systems, including metro, and also double ridership by 2025. Some of that plan has been put into the implementation phase and the funding phase, and that's good news. A significant component does remain unfunded, and some components that were called out, and we can review that later, has been repurposed from one planned use. For example, we had put forth plans for light rail in the district that was repurposed as streetcar in the district, and so there are those conversions that have taken place. But we can point to things like the New York Ave Metro Rail Station, Mount Vernon, additional capacity at Mount Vernon Square, and Roslyn, the Largo extension, as accomplishments of this particular plan, and as well as furthering things like the Silver Line, et cetera, so those are good things. Now, I'll remind you that one of the reasons we're bringing this back to the board is that the compact does charge the board with creating and then updating a mass transit plan for the immediate and long-range needs of the zone, which means that this board is charged with not only thinking about the metro rail system, but also the transit system in its entirety. For all of the components of the transit zone, which would include our compact. And so that is one of the reasons that this is important as a board responsibility as per the compact. And it does need to think about more than simply metro rail, metro bus, and metro access. It needs to think about the entire transit network, all modes, all operators within all the geographies in which we operate. So with that as a background, that is why we are doing this work at Metro and why the board's role is important in adopting an updated plan, which now is again, out of date as per, things have changed in the last 15 years. And as a reminder of how this all fits together, we have at the regional level, bodies have put together what's called a long-range plan for all transportation projects. The TPB and COG have put that together. And that is currently being up, that will be updated in 2014. We're living with the last CLRP, as it's called, which was put together in 2010. That includes a range of transit projects, including Silver Line, but no Metro-sponsored projects, about $7 billion in projects. And I will note, as per our previous discussions, there's no projects in there right now that specifically address core capacity. But things like the Purple Line, H Street Streetcar, et cetera, are in the CLRP. So what we propose in Momentum is to create Metro 2025, a series of projects which would address the inadequacy of the CLRP in accommodating core capacity improvements and needs. And we've been through that discussion many times. I don't need to reprise that. But what the RTSP does is the RTSP is a bigger picture, much longer time frame examination of the needs that Metro and non-Metro systems will be asked to provide by and through the middle of this century. So everything that's in the CLRP, everything that's in Metro 2025, and then some. So this will consist of new lines through the core, metro rail extensions, core station improvements, and surface transportation additions to the region. So that is a background of what it is that this particular project, the RTSP, the Regional Transit System Plan, it's bigger than Metro 2025, it's bigger than the CLRP, it is the multimodal, multi-operator plan for the entire region. I'm going to walk through a couple charts and graphs with you that give you a context for what it is that we should be prepared to face through mid-century. You can see on the left-hand side there's a map. This map shows a visual depiction of peak loads on the rail system by 2040. And you can see where we see green, we have sufficient capacity. We are at or below 100 persons per car. Where we see red, we have significant crowding conditions. And you can see here, I guess this laser won't work, you can see here, by 2040, even with the improvements we are proposing in Metro 2025, we're seeing significant crowding conditions above our service standards throughout much of the core and extending into Northern Virginia. And this is driven by the fact that we're expecting to see a significant uptick in boardings, transfers, and peak ridership. The region is growing, and the system that we've got is going to be chugging along and struggling to keep up with anticipated demand. I'm going to show you another map. This left-hand side map will change. This is based upon the 2040 land use forecasts that are adopted by COG. COG has also put together an aspirations land use forecast. This essentially moves more jobs and more households to regional activity centers, if you will, closer, denser, smarter type of land use forecast. If that forecast does end up being reality, and that we do see more jobs and households live in activity centers closer to transit, closer to the core, those crowding conditions become worse. And we can see here that the crowding conditions that we saw in the previous map, I'll go back and forth for a moment, all those reds that we're looking at 100 to 120 persons per car become purples. So significant amounts of crowding are anticipated to take place by 2040 with the system that currently is planned to be built, including Metro 2025 and including the Silver Line extensions. And so those are conditions that we at Metro have to be cognizant of as we plan a transit system that does not have crowding conditions that are in excess of service standards, nor what our passengers demand. The same will be true, or these conditions will also be present in the bus and the surface transportation network. We are forecasted to experience significant ridership growth on the bus network, and these numbers on the left-hand side are for all of the bus networks, Metro bus, local bus providers, commuter bus. So these will grow. And as you can see on the right-hand side, one condition we're experiencing region-wide is roadway congestion. So you can see that the hours that we're spending on congested roadways, which our buses have to share with cars, will increase as well. So significant degradation of the bus network as we add riders, and those riders end up stuck in worse and worse traffic over time. And finally, Metro Access, which we know is a significant service we're providing. The number of patrons that may need those services over time is expected to increase dramatically as the region's elderly population grows, as we live longer and longer lives, but also as we see the incidence of disabilities with increased longer lives does tend to increase as well. So looking at rough numbers, if today's system was to be put forward in 2040, going from about 2 million trips per year to 3.6 million trips per year, and to think about that in terms of operating subsidy, think about adding $66 million in operating subsidy to Metro Access. And that's just with our current system in place, with no system extension. So there's a big challenge in front of us, and we're proposing that the system needs to respond and be ready to accommodate these challenges. So this is what when we flash forward and take a look at the future, this is what we're seeing the key challenges are that the RTSP has to address. First of all, it does have to resolve core capacity constraints. Even with Metro 2025, and even with 8-car trains, we will see huge levels of crowding, especially at our merge points, Roslyn, L'Enfant Plaza. We have to alleviate those pinch points as well as to solve other core issues that will continue to get worse, not better. We do see that we'll need better connections between our regional activity centers. There is already a growth in suburb-to-suburb movements, both for work and non-work trips. The current system, as it was envisioned as well as it's operationalized, doesn't necessarily provide those connections particularly well. And so to the extent that our transit network, not only Metro's but our regional providers, can improve those connections and allow those suburb-to-suburb and regional activity center connections to take place, will not only support region forward, but also provide a level of connections which today doesn't exist. We also need to be able to make cross-jurisdictional connections. You riders in the system, especially in surface transportation, may note that oftentimes a bus boarding may take you to the jurisdictional line, and then you'll either need to transfer to a different operator or a different mode in order to continue one's trip. That is no longer how this region functions. This region really does function in an interdependent manner, and the future regional transit system needs to allow passengers, allow our customers to make interjurisdictional trips on surface transportation. And finally, we found that one of the greatest drivers of transit usage and reducing then congestion, reducing VMT, creating a more sustainable, livable region is to make our system more accessible. When we model forward access to usage of the system, one of the key drivers of usage of the system is actually being able to get to the system, walkability, access to the bus stops, making sure that we have transit stations and bus stops that are within, that have pedestrian networks that can connect. So improving access to the system will be key to supporting more riders using an efficient transit network. So that's the background of what we're seeing going forward. We haven't been constructing this in a vacuum for the past 2.5 years. We've met with all of your DOTs. We've had over 10 different technical advisory groups that are comprised of all the regional DOTs as well as officials from advisory groups and government agencies. We have conducted numerous sets of one-on-one meetings, and we've done this because we want this plan to be drawn up collaboratively. This plan is something that has to be co-authored by all of the different parties, transit agencies, DOTs, planning offices, stewards of this region. And we're happy to say that we have been able to move this group through this planning process and arrive at a set of recommendations that has been co-authored and collaboratively arrived upon. So we've also been able to present this to the JCC, the RAC, and at CPB as well. And when we were doing that planning process, what we did was we looked at the original plans that were envisioned back in 99, understood which ones were still needed to be constructed, which ones needed to be modified. We asked the DOTs to suggest plans that they had in the local jurisdictions that they thought were worthy of consideration to be in the RTSP. We also proposed new ideas based upon how the forecast suggests the world will move, and in essence threw them all into the hopper and began to analyze them and understand whether or not those individual elements that were suggested by the by our regional partners or by Metro solved the problems in regional mobility that we saw to be transpiring. And we tested them against each other, and we combined them into packages and tried to understand how these different elements worked. And the key pieces were we had to make sure that they maximized our existing system, that they improved regional mobility, that they fixed the core, and they expanded transit usage region-wide. What we did find, there's not one silver bullet that ultimately solved the region's problems, so that's why we had to conduct these packages. But all in all, we ended up testing a whole lot of stuff. So when you hear proposals from your jurisdictions and from your stakeholders about whether or not a Kansas Avenue station was tested, or whether or not we looked at a beltway line, or whether or not we took a look at light rail across the American Legion Bridge or across the Wilson Bridge, the answer is yes. So in effect, almost every conceivable transit improvement in the region that has been talked about or thought about was put into our testing and evaluated to see whether or not it did the following. Did these things actually reduce congestion? Did they reduce VMT? Did they better connect our regional activity centers? Did they increase the mode share for transit? Did they produce travel time savings? Were they cost effective? Did they actually move more individuals across the region on transit? Did they improve parking availability at Metro Rail stations? Did they have an impact on the environment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? All in all, there were dozens and dozens of measures by which we evaluated these. So with that as a preface into the process, I'll use my last 4 minutes to walk you through what it is that we're finding here. So from that evaluation, this is what we find. There's no one solution for the core. It's going to need a multiple level, multi-pronged approach to resolve core capacity. First step, of course, is Metro 2025. But going forward, solving the problems that will be in the core will take multiple approaches. We do see that station crowding will continue to be an issue. And so we're going to need to be able to add new stations with additional pedestrian walkways to alleviate that crowding. We do need to move beyond the jurisdictional boundary approach to surface transportation, that even though it might be politically difficult to move surface transportation options across a jurisdictional boundary, it doesn't make regional sense, nor is it a wise use of very scarce transportation dollars to execute that model going forward. So we are going to continue to advocate for moving transportation options across jurisdictional boundaries. And we do need to continue to support the local jurisdictions' initiatives that improve central district circulation, such as the various streetcar initiatives, such as the BRT initiatives that are out there. Going to the rail network in terms of major findings, when we add rail extensions, we make core capacity problems worse. No matter, we tested extensions, over 12 extensions, and each time we did that, the core looked worse. We found that parking demand will continue to exceed supply. We know that we're on average above our overall supply of parking spaces in terms of overall demand, and so we have to alleviate parking demand. That when we add more high-capacity transit, such as light rail, such as BRT, such as rail extensions, we actually increase the overall number of households and jobs that can use transit to get to one another. And finally, walkability is huge. To the extent that we can work with our local jurisdictions to improve the pedestrian connections to the transit network, the more we see the usage of the transit network tick up on par with capital investments in the system itself. So with that, we'll move to what some of the solutions are that are being proposed. You'll see here the spaghetti string map shows you.
Absolutely. The parking demand at rail at transit stations.
At the net, well, we modeled the Metro Rail's our 60,000 or so parking spaces.
Okay.
We also, you know, were able to uncover the fact that about 12.5% of the overall parking demand for Metro Rail is being provided by jurisdictions or non-Metro facilities. The spaghetti map on your screen is a compilation of some of the surface transportation corridors that are being evaluated right now. And you can see some familiar ones, including the Charles County Transit Way. You can see some of the Route 7 streetcar initiatives. You can see extensions of the Purple Line potentially across Wilson Bridge. You can see we're modeling one of the suggestions was a light rail to connect from White Flint over to Dunloring. These, again, were suggestions that were brought forth by the jurisdictions as well as through our planning staff who modeled them. What we're doing with this compilation of surface transportation corridors is to understand which ones have to be done first or be established in a tier one. Right now, that is everything that's in the CLRP plus a PCM, which is in Metro 2025. Those are critically important to the region's future. We are going to establish what the, you know, again, these priorities should be. We'll establish tier two and tier three surface transportation corridors. And these are going to be ones that model well, meaning that they have the ridership that would substantiate them being put forward. They have the land uses adjacent to those catchment areas that mean that those can be well supported by the adjacent land use. And they also are regionally important from a mobility standpoint and, by the way, are unfunded. So we're going to be working with this technical advisory group to understand of the many, many options that are being floated, which ones have to be funded next. And then finally, tier three, good transportation suggestions, but currently the land use or the ridership don't match up with the significance that the tier one and tier two proposals may have. On the rail side, you can see that what we looked at was proposals to improve the core. And what I'm going to show you first, letters A and D, as you can see them on screen, probably easier than on your iPads. We looked at a variety of options for improving the core. All of them involved some sort of loop at some point in time. So we looked at east-west connections, north-south connections, and we looked at first at modeling a loop that would bring, essentially would add resource service to the blue line, but also bring the blue line eastward underneath roughly M Street. It could be north or south by a block. And then the variations include either bringing it down 10th Street or bringing it over on 2nd Street northeast, southeast, with a connection at Union Station and down through the Ballpark District and then back across Haynes Point to Norwich National Airport. Now, these two scenarios did not test as well. You can see scenario D, there was an effort to see whether or not we could link in a Union Station connection to the Crystal City and Potomac Yard and Columbia Pike streetcar initiatives by using either a light rail or a streetcar-type vehicle, that pink line emanating from Union Station on the right-hand side. Again, from a ridership standpoint, didn't give us a sufficient amount of capacity that we would need to decant some of the ridership from Union Station in a high-volume manner. So right now, where we're ending up is a combination of scenarios B and C, and you can see in both of these instances what the system needs is, on the Virginia side of the equation, it needs to have a second rail line that emanates from or north of existing Roslyn, but an express line, if you will, that would take Orange and Silver from Roslyn over with a stop at Ballston and then a stop at East Falls Church before continuing on the existing alignment. That's a critical necessity given what we're seeing in terms of ridership. And then also we realized that when we were modeling this back and forth, the Union Station connection was much more important to the system overall, and it was important to not disinclude that. So we're leaning towards having the 2nd Street northeast-southeast connection. So the loop, if you will, on the left-hand side in B that includes bringing the east-west connection from M Street over to Union Station South, along with including the express lines envisioned in C on Orange and Silver. So that we're going to be producing a hybrid version of that as the proposed solution, as well as these extensions. So as well as taking a look at an Orange Line extension to Gainesville, a blue line down to Prince William County, and Orange Line extension to Bowie. So these are the elements that will be brought back for consideration, and this is what the next steps are. We'll be bringing this back for as information item again in March or April with a final network, if you will. So we'll have all the components of the network for your review, and that triggers a round of public comments and review as per the compact, which will be going out to the public and testing it with the jurisdictions as well as the general public through the rest of calendar 2014, bringing it back to this group for adoption at the end of calendar 2014. So I appreciate you being patient with the description and happy to take questions.
Thank you for the presentation, and I'll turn to Mr. Giancola. Any other members who have questions?
Thank you, Mr. Canan, for the briefing. It's very intriguing. I'm sure it's a planner's paradise to look at all these options and scenarios. One question I had is, and I'm looking at the earlier charts where you projected numbers to 2040 for the use of rail. I don't know. It just seems to me that's low. You know, so, I mean, I guess they're conservative, but I'm curious about the sensitivity of the models that they use with the millennials. Mm-hmm. And certainly the millennials now wanting to use more transit or more other options as a choice, not necessarily having a car. And whether or not the models are sensitive to that, or is it still being devised to make them more sensitive?
Glad you asked that question in particular. One of the things that we have to do is we have to not only comport with the adopted cooperative land use forecast, but also we have to synchronize the model with the regional travel demand model, which is managed at CPB, in order for this regional transit system plan to be acceptable to, you know, federal agencies, et cetera, to have to be an authorizable plan. However, we are in the coming year going to be stress testing this against a variety of different trends, if you will, that we have seen, including whether or not transit usage and car ownership amongst millennials is going to continue to have a very different pattern than Gen X and, you know, late stage boomers, including whether or not we can model things like induced demand for transit, including whether or not there are land use implications. For instance, if we can draw forward a relationship between the addition of transit and perhaps a changing in how developers see development opportunities and add density, does that change how this model performs? So we'll be doing that over the course of the next year, but we want to make sure that we do have to comport with the rigor of the travel demand models that are used at the regional level as well. So we'll be seeing whether there are any divergences, and it'll be a fun public discussion to have as well.
The other comment I have, it's not a question, is more related to, as you show the extension of the rail lines into other counties in Virginia, and maybe even to some degree eventually up to Frederick County in the north, there are some implications of the compact and jurisdictional contributions, and certainly you should be inputting that to the appropriate section of our operation to make them aware of that and to start at least thinking about that, although in 2040, I'll be an old man, or if I'm still alive at 95. But nonetheless, I think we need to be thinking about that.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Yule?
Yes, thank you. And just to piggyback on that similar statement of concern, question I have, a couple of questions. One is, what role will WMATA play in assuring the adoption and the implementation of the RSTP by the other regional regional bodies?
Well, our job is to set a transit vision for the region, and we have been doing that since the inception of the original adopted regional system plan 68. It is our aspiration that the different jurisdictional partners that we've been bringing along in this will be able to jointly embrace this vision and be moved to execute it. Now, we don't have the purview of determining what individual jurisdictions eventually decide to do in their annual budgets, but it's our aspiration that by setting this vision up and making sure that not only are components embedded within the CLRP, but also adopted by us at WMATA and therefore endorsed by the component jurisdictions, that this can be the playbook. The track record has been good so far. The track record, if we take a look at the 99 plan and say, you know, we actually got about half of that funded, that's on the right track. And we are on track to actually accomplishing our goals in terms of the ridership increases and as well as the addition of fixed guideway miles. I think we can do better. And it's my personal goal that we can actually make this the playbook. Again, that will be the goal of any plan, but certainly ours.
And one of the entities decide they don't want to participate, does that hinder this plan moving forward at all?
Well, I think that there's two answers to that question. One is, if a jurisdiction which has been working with us all along decides that something needs to change, that's actually part of the planning process. So a good, for instance, in that case is, in the 99 plan, there was a significant amount of light rail envisioned to be put in the district. Well, that has been now changed into a streetcar initiative, and that's good. It moves forward. There are other projects where the envisioned funding was transferred to a different type of mode. So that's the first answer to your question. The second answer to your question is that over time, as conditions on the ground change, we have to reevaluate these plans. So we don't anticipate that that needs to be a confrontational approach. We would imagine that we would come back and revisit and imagine how conditions on the ground demand a different plan.
Supporter.
Just to build on that last comment you made, this kind of long-term planning obviously is essential for us to take account of things that we anticipate happening in the future. But I think we also need to keep in mind that one of the things that we know for sure is that whatever plans we make now for 2040 are going to come out differently. The situation in 2040 will be different than we anticipate. We don't know exactly what it'll be, but we know it'll be different. When the system was built, the anticipation was that people would commute from the suburbs into the core. Well, it's turned out that in addition to that, there's a lot of suburb-to-suburb commuting, and we're starting to pick up on some of those things now. We anticipate that millennials will use more public transportation. The other thing I'm hearing is they want to work in place. They don't want to go anywhere. They want to, you know, use their digital devices to work in the cloud. So it, just as it's possible that we could see a crushing additional number of riders on the system, it also could be that we will stop seeing commuting patterns that are based on time of day. It could mean that more people will be teleworking, people will be moving around other than at the beginning and the end of the workday. So I think, and I'm sure you're doing this, we need to sort of be a little bit open-minded about where things are steering us right now. This doesn't mean we can't do any planning. We need to do the planning. It's essential to do the planning. But we also need to remember that in the longer term, things will undoubtedly be a little bit different than what we see right now.
That's correct. In a lot of ways, we're seeing those trends already. We take a look at our, you know, off-peak demand being one of our drivers of overall growth. I will say that when we take a look at 2040 horizon, the one thing we know for sure is that demand will be up, and we have to plan accordingly. And then the individual patterns, either by time of day or by demographic group or by type of mode, are where the variations can be. But the one thing we know for certain is that we're already hustling to keep up with the demand we have, and it's only going up.
Just a question on it. First of all, I applaud your recommendation that we have to think beyond our jurisdictional lines for bus service. And with that as an aspiration, have you considered ways that that might practically happen?
Well, from a planning perspective, from a route, then from a line perspective, absolutely. The question then becomes, how do you operationalize that? One way that we can begin to move that discussion in the right direction is by bringing parties together and have them engage in those discussions, which we at Metro have been doing for the past several years as local jurisdictions have been imagining BRT networks and streetcar networks and light rail. We have been convening an interoperability working group here to at least get the different players to the table and help hopefully move a more collaborative approach to things like vehicle procurement and dynamic envelope, right sizing, et cetera, et cetera. Again, we can't make the decisions for individual jurisdictions, but we can make the case for why a coordinated approach to transit investments is, in fact, not only the best regional mobility, but also the best expenditure of dollars.
Was moving... we talked about the millennials. Now I'm going to talk about the boomers. Mm-hmm. And moving boomers moving forward in this region, part of your consideration. For example, I grow increasingly concerned about lack of transit access in less dense areas of our region. Has that been part of your planning?
Well, what we do is we take a look to the thresholds for transit, as for any type of travel demand, are based upon either a place where that produces trips or a place that attracts trips, and whether or not that's a place of residence, whether that's a workplace, or whether that's an activity center or an event center. I will say that when we take a look at how the system performs, we're looking at land use densities and the occupants of those land uses may be various in form. So if boomers are moving to places that are driving additional densities, whether those are in AACs, whether those are in, you know, closer, denser, smarter type communities, that will pop in terms of how it is the transit system can accommodate their needs. There are decisions that demographic groups can make in order to live in places where it's simply not economically feasible or from a ridership standpoint smart to run very heavy capital investments in transit. So we can't control for decisions that boomers may or may not make individually. We certainly can make sure that places that are envisioned to have the densities that would support the different types of transit that can be produced are in fact lined up with transit proposals. So, and boomers are an interesting group. It comes down to about, you know, a third. A third of the boomers love living in, you know, low density suburbs. A third are moving to much more higher density environments, and a third could go either way.
Right. So there's no one profile, I would guess.
No.
Yes. So lastly, and then we'll move on. When do you expect to come back to the committee, or what further actions do you need from the committee?
Sure. So our plan is right now to come back to the committee with a full network to be presented in March or April of 2014. At that point in time, we'll also be able to explore, Board Member Giancola, some of the sensitivities, if you will, alternate universes. What if the world evolves in a different way? As well as describe to you in detail the public outreach that will be conducted, both as per the compact requirements, as well as in our desire to engage the general public in this discussion about what it is that the region's transit future should look like. That process, we're imagining, will go through the remainder of the calendar spring and into the summer, and we will bring back to the board for an action item, an adoption of a plan that has been vetted by the public, that has been vetted by the jurisdictions, and also been presented to you in October or November of 2014.
Okay. And my final question is more parochial for us in the district. It seems like one of the more dramatic areas is a new Circle line serving Georgetown and Logan Circle. Say just a little bit more about that.
Well, if I might, to make this even less parochial.
Okay.
And the reason is that what this does, this loop, is this provides the Washington, D.C. region with a loop line that connects the region's downtowns. And so if you imagine 1968, the region had essentially having one downtown, but now having not only multiple downtowns within the district, but now downtowns in Northern Virginia as well. And having really, you know, four airports, National, BWI, Dulles, and Union Station. So we're providing a loop connection that will take you potentially from the downtown airport, Union Station, to an actual, you know, winged airport, National, and connect you through these very, very important centers of economic activity that are more than just regionally, centers of economic activity, now national ones. So yes, what it would do is, yes, you'd be able to get from Roslyn, nationally important center of economic activity, into Georgetown, nationally important center of economic activity, all the way through the various downtowns in D.C. to Union Station. So this notion of an inner loop, if you will, that connects the region's downtown, is something that we could really use, A, and B, could support our vitality going forward.
Fantastic. That's good news. Let's find a little bit to get it done. So those are my questions. And unless you have anything else to put on the record, Mr. Khanna, okay. Are there any other agenda items that the members would like to put on the table? If there is no other discussion, we will adjourn at 10:47.